I'm gonna introduce you in a different way this time.
Oh, okay.
So I have an idea. So
all right.
So it'll be a little different, but
just wing it.
Dance, monkey, dance. Movie edition.
Hello and welcome to this movie edition of Dance Monkey Dance. I'm Chris, and with me today is somebody you've heard before, but I've never had the chance to say that I have a published author on the show. So with me today is Mark. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Good. Mark has a book on Amazon called Nerd Night Infiltration that everybody should go buy. It's only $2.99 for the Kindle edition.
Yes.
And apparently if you're on Kindle Unlimited, it's free. How does that work?
They have a, I think that's that, you get, it's like Netflix for books.
Okay.
So you pay, it's called Kindle Unlimited, and you just get a book. And when you're done with that, you get the next book and the next book and the next book. Just exactly like Netflix.
So do you see money for that? Do you get money?
I do. Yes.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. I'm still paid for that. Just, you know, like a sale. Basically, you're paying for the subscription rather than in each individual book. So if you read a lot, it's going to pay off.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So that's your first. Now you have another thing on Kindle too, don't you?
I also have a nonfiction book called Acting for Artists, which just came out in paperback.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So now you have a paperback, and you have two books on Kindle, and then you have a couple other things that you can actually buy on Amazon. You have the Zordic to Boldly Go, Where Everyone Has Gone Before.
Yeah. That one surprised me. I think that's a used something that somebody's selling.
And it's considered a collectible, which I think is kind of interesting.
I know. That's exciting.
Oh, it's signed. Did you sign something for somebody?
Like I say, it's probably one that somebody bought at a convention.
Oh. Because it's interesting because it says it's collectible and then it says it's signed and then it's a first edition. Oh.
Yes, it is.
Look at you.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. So
the Nerd Nights, it's kind of a quick read, but I'm actually looking at doing a trilogy, and when I have a full trilogy, I might put that out in paperback.
Sweet. Now, when you put stuff out on paperback, are you self-publishing that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And for anybody that's interested in that, is that a hard road to go down, or is it?
The hardest part is of course, you know, producing something that's people are going to want to buy, and marketing. You know, you're on your own for marketing, which is the part that I hate, but
right,
you know, it's tough, but that's the trick.
And that paperback, if anybody's interested, is $7.19 apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But you can buy a used one if you don't want to support Mark and you want to go somewhere else, you can buy a used one for $26.04.
Of Acting for Artists?
Yes. there are two used copies. One is $26.04 and one is $26.05.
Wow.
One ships from New Jersey, one ships from Indiana. And apparently you can pay more than triple the amount that Mark is trying to sell it for.
Yeah.
So hey,
I wouldn't.
I would support Mark and pay $7.
I think I would too.
So yeah, okay, yeah. People are wacky.
Apparently,
I would. Can people buy the Zordic book on your website?
Not that one, no.
Not that one.
That one, I think, probably only available at get the used copies at Amazon.
Okay.
I might still have a few of them if you catch me at a convention, but the where everyone has gone before is pretty much gone. I might look at getting that re-released. But the rebooted Zortix are available online.
Okay. I think I might actually have a copy of the Toboligo.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I think I got one of those off you when they first came out.
Probably.
So support
it's
Mark.
It's fun to go back and look at the old stuff sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Support Mark, buy a book from him. You know, there.
Yeah.
It's on, like, his new one is on Kindle. I mean, come on. All you're doing is downloading it.
True. Then, now, right now it's only on Kindle. I am hoping maybe, like, by the end of the year to get it on Nook.
Okay.
So.
Is that a hard process to do? If somebody wanted to go the Kindle route, is that a difficult process?
Not terribly difficult, no.
No?
Yeah, like I say, the hardest part is, you know, the hard part is writing a book.
Right.
The actual publishing is not too difficult. And then, of course, like I say, you're on your own in terms of marketing.
So in the case of something like this, I know I've sat in, I went to a convention here in Charleston last year where it was mostly authors. And they were saying that when you're doing a book to be published on paper, you have to worry about the size of the book and how big the pages are and how many words can fit on those pages. And
mm-hmm.
when you're doing something that's basically for Kindle, do you still have to worry about all that stuff, or is that stuff kind of out the window and you're just formatting it to their standards?
Well, yes and no. There's a little bit more leeway. But a lot of times, you're going to want to go to print eventually.
Right.
So, okay. You know, in this case, I did kind of, I was kind of aware of how it was going to go on a page first, and then,
okay.
You can go into the e-reader format from there, relatively easy.
Okay.
But when you're talking about prose, you know, just a novel, you're not as concerned as you are with, like, acting for artists. I have illustrations, I have exercises, so that's a lot more time consuming in terms of doing a layout than if you're just writing a straight story.
Okay, I got you. It's interesting. So if these do well, then can you go to, like, a publisher and say, hey, look, these sell really well, you should publish them, and then that way you don't have to pay for it anymore?
Well, it depends. I think so much stuff is now being done self-publishing. If I go to a publisher, then I'm sharing my income with them. And, you know, I'm not sure if there's value to that, or if I'm better off just continuing to do the work myself and taking a bigger cut of the income.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So, besides plugging Mark's stuff, we are here today to talk about a movie. We haven't really done this summer because it's kind of been it hasn't been a great summer for movies.
Not really.
I can only think of, like, two films that I actually liked this summer.
Yeah?
I've seen a bunch, but nothing that I really, really got my motor going. Like, it seemed like last year there was a lot of stuff that was out that I liked when I went to
mm-hmm.
go see the films, and this
yeah.
year there just wasn't anything out there.
No,
not until late in the summer was there anything that I even gave a crap about.
Right.
I mean, I saw X-Men. I kind of liked it, but
yeah.
I can't say that it's a movie that A, I would watch again, or B, even, like, pick up on disc. And I don't know
yeah.
if that's just me getting older or what, but You know, my company rented out a theater and sent everybody to go see Transformers 4 over the summer, and that I saw it for free, and I still feel like I paid too much. And I don't know. There wasn't anything right up until August 1st that I was like, there's nothing that I care about this summer. And then Marvel came out with Guardians of the Galaxy. How did you see it? What was your general thoughts on the movie?
I saw it, I think it was the Wednesday it came out, and I think I had heard that it was the highest Wednesday box office take of ever.
Right.
Yeah, went with some friends and caught a matinee, and loved it. I in terms of enjoying it, I don't know that I can say anything that hasn't been said by everybody. I mean, it was, everything was right there.
I have seen it twice.
Okay.
I saw it the Thursday before it opened. For some reason, here in Charleston, they don't do midnight showings. They do an 8 o'clock showing on the Thursday before.
Okay.
So we went and we saw it that day, and then I had to take my wife's car to get it fixed, and they were like, hey, this is going to be like 4 hours. You should go wait somewhere else. And there was a movie theater down the street, so I walked down there and I saw it in IMAX 3D.
Nice.
So I've seen it. I've seen it both ways. I've seen it in 2D and I've seen it in 3D.
Okay.
If anybody's been following the movies, the movie aspect of Dance Monkey Dance, you will remember how much I loved last year's Pacific Rim. And I can say that I probably love this movie more.
Okay.
And I don't know. I guess it's just you don't run across really good sci-fi a lot.
You know, I think, one of the things that really hit me about this, like a week or two before this, somebody had recommended the TV show Dominion for me.
Okay.
The angels fighting. And I turned it on. I watched about 5 minutes of it and turned it off and realized I am done with the whole dystopian science fiction thing. It seems like since Battlestar Galactica, there has not been any science fiction that hasn't involved civilizations wiped out and humans are living in tents. You know, you got Walking Dead, you have Defiance, you have Revolution. Everything has just been this depressing, dark science fiction.
Yeah.
And Guardians of the Galaxy was not. It was just plain bright in every possible way. It was fun. It was active. It was exciting. Even the Star Wars prequels, admittedly they were designed to be dark, but even they just added to this kind of gloom that's been pervading science fiction forever.
Yeah, and even in the last couple of years, if you look at what they consider sci-fi, you look at things like Pacific Rim, which is very much the same way. You look at Dread, which was the same way. Oblivion, this year's Tom Cruise movie, where it's fighting a hopeless battle against aliens. Ender's Game, like all these quote unquote science fiction films are like, I think they need to reclassify it and not be so much called science fiction, but maybe like dystopian fiction or something, like, because Guardians, admittedly, by a lot of people didn't think it was going to work. A lot of people were like, you're taking a comic that not a lot of people read, you're putting in a talking raccoon and a talking tree, and chances are this is going to fall flat on its face.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even Marvel felt that way by putting it in August. Because August is primarily a month in the movies where you put things that you're not really sure whether they're going to work, and you're not taking away from anything. Like, it's, you can't put it near a holiday. And, it's usually like August and February are the 2 months where if you have something that you don't think it's really going to work, that's where you stick them. And yeah. Marvel did that with Guardians of the Galaxy, because what if this is a flop? What if this is our first misstep? And I think right now they're probably kicking themselves that they didn't either wait for November like they did with Thor, or earlier in the summer.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, granted, it's been out for 17 days, and right now it's sitting at $500 million worldwide.
Yeah. Like,
just imagine what it could have done had it gone up against Transformers, or like something that a week where you look at it and you're like, hey, there was nothing else this summer.
No. There was nothing. This would have ruled the summer.
Yes. Yes. And they're already talking like this is going to be the biggest film of the summer. And it opened in August.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people who I work with were all like, oh, well, it got beat by Ninja Turtles. And it was like, yeah, but like this week, according to the box office stats, they only beat them by $4 million, which is huge when you think about. So for Guardians, people spent $24.5 million this weekend. For Ninja Turtles, they went for 28.4. Like they, for something that's 3 weeks old, that's pretty fucking good as far as box office is concerned.
Heck yeah.
Like if you look at something like Expendables 3 that was supposed to be this big thing, it made $16 million. It was number four under a movie about guys pretending to be cops. Like, I just, so yeah, I mean, you look at these stats and you got to think that Marvel is like, we should have had more faith in this.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, the faith comes with the fact that, A, they already greenlit the sequel, like, a week before they even opened this. And
true.
That they have moved the sequel to, I think, July. So,
okay.
They're, you know, it's a month earlier, but it's still prime real estate as far as, you know, it's not May.
Right.
But
it's not August.
No. But it's not August, and I think that's where, you know. I think it's Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Where is it? Let's see if I can find the. So it's coming out in 2017, which will put it a year behind Avengers 3. It'll put it, or Avengers 2. It'll put it a year behind Batman versus Superman. Which means they will probably own that summer as well.
Yeah.
Because then you don't have to worry about all the other crap. I think Marvel has done a really good job of staggering their movies and figuring out where to best put them, as long as they have like complete faith in them. But like if you look at Ant-Man's going to come out in August next year. Like they're doing that thing again where it's like, well, now with all the turmoil of that, will that be the first misstep?
Right.
And it may very well be. But I think especially with this, they stopped their cycle of one movie in the summer, one movie in the fall. And now everybody's got to wait until next summer to see the next Marvel movie. Instead of there's this constant every 6 months, there's a Marvel product out.
True.
And I think that might, I don't think it's going to hurt them, but I think they probably would have been better off waiting until November to release this.
Yeah.
And then they could have gotten,
right.
You know, they could have gotten a jump on things like everybody. Oh, spoiler alert. Everybody wants the little dancing Groot plant thing from the end of the movie. Like, I don't think they were prepared on the merchandising side for what this is becoming.
No, I'm sure.
And, you know, we were at Toys R Us with the kid yesterday, and there is one little end cap that's got Guardian stuff on it, and it all looks like crap. It all, none of it's like real detailed. The only detailed stuff is those like deluxe Marvel figures, and they're always sold out.
Yeah.
So you're left with just the crap, and it's like Marvel and Disney better get on that and be like, hey, like come release of the DVD, there better be a whole bunch of shit out for Christmas.
But you know, I say criticisms of the movie, but I mean, this is so weak, you know, it's barely a criticism, but it didn't seem like the movie was that product oriented. For example, their ship didn't seem to have a lot of character for me. I mean, usually science fiction, you know, you think of the Enterprise or the Millennium Falcon or Serenity. And I don't even remember. I think the ship had a name, but I don't even remember what it was.
It was named the Milano after Alyssa Milano.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it was basically it was a flying wing.
Right.
But, you know, I can't say I had any urge of, ooh, I got to go out and get a Milano toy.
You know? Right.
You know, I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, as, you know, I would have liked to see that piece have a little bit more character, but,
Well, and one thing I will say, for as much as I love this movie, I wish it had a decent theme song.
Yes. That was the other thing I was thinking.
Like everybody loves the soundtrack 'cause it's made up of songs from the 70s and the 80s or whatever.
Yes.
But it didn't have, like, the original Thor, even Iron Man, has a theme.
You walked out of the theater humming their song. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this does not have one. Like,
yeah.
And I kind of get what Peter Gunn was going for. Yes, he's Jason Quill is Jason Quill. Peter Quill is he's a product of the 80s. It's Arrested Development he's a 10-year-old kid or whatever who gets taken, and this is all he has left, and this is how he copes with everything. But
yeah,
during the fight with Ronan and during the action parts, there should have been a distinct Guardians theme.
Yes.
That you're able to then walk away and hum, and like everybody knows when you hear the music for the Imperial March from Star Wars, what that is and where it comes from. And
of course,
Marvel kind of holds back on that stuff.
Yeah. You know, like you say, some of the other Marvel movies have had it to an extent, but you know, like sitting here right now, I couldn't remember. Captain America was on last night, and it had a little bit of a theme, but sitting here right now, I cannot remember what it was.
Right.
You know, none of them have had that kind of the John Williams memorable type thing.
No, and I think that is associated heavily with science fiction, and I think you miss that in something like this.
Yeah.
Because this is a space opera. This is, you know, people say that this could be the Star Wars for this generation. And I think it has a potential to fall in with the best Marvel movies that are being made. But I think without things like that, without things that make it really stand out,
I take this out of the Marvel realm. You know, everybody's kind of saying, "Oh, this is the greatest superhero movie." First of all, it's not a superhero movie.
No.
It is definitely within that Marvel universe, but this is just plain darn good movie, period.
Yes.
You know, beyond just being a Marvel movie. It was good, fun science fiction.
Yeah, and one of the things that I liked about it was one of the things Marvel's really good at is making movies where nothing feels shoehorned in.
Yes.
You get just enough of what you need, and there's nothing like their one misstep with that was the original Iron Man, where they got to the end and they're like, we don't have a villain yet. Like we've spent an hour building up Iron Man without who's he going to fight? So yeah. Now we have to figure that out. But since yeah. then, they've gotten very much into streamlining everything and making sure that the story is a complete story and nothing feels extraneous. And
yeah.
that's what I really liked about this. You get to the end and you're like, there was nothing that was in there that felt like it wasn't needed.
True.
Like there was just enough of everything to show the character development and the action beats and all this stuff. And you're like, okay, well, I'm sure there's plot holes and I'm sure people have picked them apart, but for me, there's nothing that stands out as a glaring, like, well, they didn't address that.
No.
Like in other things, like other movies this summer had plot holes so big you could drive Optimus Prime through them.
Oh yeah.
But besides that, I mean, Marvel has been really good at that. And
yeah.
I think that's one of the appeals of this movie is there's nothing extraneous.
No. No, I agree.
People will say that there are parts that drag in this, but I think all those parts are for character development.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The only thing that we kind of commented on when leaving was the suspension of disbelief that the little cheap Walkman would still be working after all this time.
You know, that's what I thought too. I was like, well, where the hell is he getting batteries for that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there, I don't have any cassette tapes for longer than a year before, like, they would get eaten by the machine and then you'd have to, like,
or
take the pencil
out or yeah, they'd lose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but, you know, it's a movie. What are you going to do?
Yeah. That's relatively easy to let go. But.
Yeah. I mean, I think as far as science fiction goes, I think this is a standard that people are going to have to live up to now.
Well, and that's, you know, that's kind of one of the things I was most interested in talking about with you is we've all seen, you know, when a movie is this comes out and is this popular, there is always a knee-jerk reaction and Hollywood starts, doing all kinds of stuff. We've seen this with the superhero movies in general. Star Wars spun a whole resurgence of science fiction.
Right.
What do you think the Hollywood's reaction is going to be to the success of Guardians of the Galaxy?
I bet you within a year, you're going to see a bunch of movies that take place in outer space with talking animals. There will be like Fox Force 5 or something where it's a bunch of foxes that kind of look like raccoons where they're going to be like, I think that's a path you're going to see a lot. From people trying to get on this because people will tell it like I was one of those people that when they announced this, I was like, talking raccoons never going to work. There's no way a tree that only says three words. Come on. And those two characters are the heart of the film.
No kidding.
I mean,
they really are.
If you look at Chris Pratt pulls off his role very well. But at the same time, it's very much an in-shape Andy Dwyer from Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
It's a very similar character, and that's what he's good at.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take two characters, and one of the things that I was telling my friend at work is, not since Gollum have I seen a character that I believed wholeheartedly on screen. And being that it's a raccoon and a tree says something about not only the animation, but the performances of Bradley Cooper and even Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
You know, when Groot sacrifices himself at the end for the other Guardians and then Rocket sits down and cries, I had tears in my eyes the first time I watched it. I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, I'm a grown ass man and I'm like, I'm on the verge of tears over a fake raccoon crying over a dead tree.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is different. Like, but I think people are going to see those and people are going to see the heart of Rocket and the heart of Groot. And they're going to try to figure out how to mass market that, but it'll be just slightly different. And, you know, maybe it's a detective, like a space detective, and his sidekick, the walking azalea plant or something, like, because that's what fucking Hollywood does. They just pile on and they're like, well, this worked for Guardian, so it's obviously going to work for us.
Right. Right. And that's what's always ridiculous about these things is, you know, they latch on to the ridiculous stuff.
Yes.
You know, I can see like a whole bunch of movies like coming out with 70s music.
Yes. Yes. You know, people in the 70s, like those artists are going to go nuts because all of a sudden they're going to be like, you want to use my song? Look, Hooked on a Feeling. Look how well it worked for Guardians. Well, yeah. It worked well for Guardians because Peter Gunn had that in mind when he was writing the script.
And yeah, he knew how that was all going to fit situation. In.
And I think all the music does. I think there's not one piece of music in there that doesn't fit the situation. Like they were just like, hey, we'll just throw this song in there. No, everything, even Cherry Bomb was well placed, even though it's probably the one song that doesn't really fit on the soundtrack, but it fits the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do think is funny about this is everybody's been praising J.J. Abrams for going back to real props, real sets for the next Star Wars film. And they put out that thing where he was in the market on whatever desert planet that might be. And then the puppet walked out next to him and stuff. And they, as if he was saying, look, we're not doing digital creatures. And then this comes out where two of the best performances in the film are by digital creatures.
Yeah.
And I think it's a weird turning point of what's going to become successful. Is it going to be a return to practical effects, or are people going to look at this and say, if we just put in the time and the money, we can have this too?
Well, and that's what's sad. I think the problem with either, you know, if you're talking about puppets or if you're talking about digital characters, if you're doing it as a shortcut, it's going to fail. If you're doing it because you can put enough effort into it to make it real, that's the secret to making it successful.
Well, and I think Marvel and Peter Gunn did extremely well with walking that line. Like, yeah. I don't think they were ever in a situation where they were on sets that were just giant green screen rooms. Everything seemed practical, and everything seemed like it was actually there.
Yeah, there were, you know, obviously there were some green screens, but there was enough of the practical elements for the actors to exist in.
Yeah,
that you know, anything that was green screen was background.
Yeah, and it, you know, it wasn't we're going to build all stormtroopers and none of them are going to be real. It's we have two main characters where they're not going to be there. And those are the things that we really have to focus on. And those are the things that we have to get right to make this work.
Right.
As to where other filmmakers are just like, well, just stick in a talking raccoon. It'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
The lip sync doesn't have to be perfect. I mean, it's a raccoon where James Gunn is, you know, sitting there going, that doesn't look quite right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but and I think that's a thing in Marvel, too. I mean, Marvel has always been good at that. Of doing these crazy visual effects that serve the story instead of serving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of my favorite all-time shots in a movie is from Avengers, where they, in the battle, where the camera flies from each member of the team.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes from one shot to the other to the other. And you just follow it, and it's you then realize, hey, that's one unbroken shot. It's all digital, but like it's one unbroken shot that winds up to where you're like, holy crap, that was a really cool thing. So they know how to walk that line, and it gives me hope for Ant-Man, even though all the turmoil that's been around that, because you know they're going to put effort into Avengers and they're going to put their effort into everything else. This was the, hey, they're going to take care of the smaller stuff too.
Yeah. You know what else? Even the little post-credits scene?
Yes.
I kind of saw that and thought, ooh, that could have some potential. You know? You know, they're with the a really good CG, they could actually do a decent Howard the Duck.
They could. I don't think they're going to, though.
I doubt it. No, not really. No, that's got too bad a bad rep.
Well, from what I read, it was Peter Gunn sitting in the editing room like 3 months ago or 4 months ago, and they were finalizing the film, and the editor said, they were talking about the post credits, and he said, well, what would be funny is if we put Howard the Duck in there.
Yeah.
And they never thought that Kevin Feige would actually go for it. And they wrote the line of, why do you let him lick you like that or whatever?
Yeah.
And they sat him down and they said, okay, we know we're going back to the collector for the final shot. What if the camera pans around and it's Howard the Duck? And apparently yeah. Kevin Feige was like, that's brilliant. That's awesome. Let's do that. Because
yeah, why not?
Howard the Duck has a bad reputation because of the film, but he's still technically a Marvel character.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was interesting because the first time that I saw it, the theater was packed, and it was probably half the people my age and half the people like teens or younger.
Yeah.
And half of them got the reference and half of them didn't. And it was walking that fine line of the audience. If you're going to do something, the audience, you need to skew it for teens and younger who haven't seen the other film.
But, you know, even if you don't know who Howard the Duck is, hey, there's a giant talking duck.
Right.
That's funny.
Right.
You know, you can enjoy it on that basis.
I did think it was weird going back to the film that all the press before the movie came out was, well, there's actually two bad guys in this. It's Ronan and it's the Collector. And when you look at the amount of screen time the Collector has, it's almost the same amount as he had in the post-credit scene for Thor, where you're just getting to know the dude, and then he's gone, and you're like, well, so Benicio del Toro was on set for what, like 2 days? One day to shoot Thor, one day to shoot this. Like, what the? Like, they're just
nice work if you can get it.
I guess. I mean, it just seems like a waste of an actor, almost. Like, you're building. I'm assuming he's going to be in other films, but like, you're building up this character, and you have somebody like Benicio del Toro that wants to do it, and then you're like, oh, okay, here's like your 2 minutes. It's like it was like Glenn Close. Like, you get this mega successful star, and she's in it for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't mind that with John C. Reilly, because John C. Reilly, he's very recognizable. And when I first saw him in the trailers, it kind of took me out of the trailer a little bit because, oh, it's John C. Reilly.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And even though it's Glenn Close, you don't really think about it that way, because it's kind of like Robert Redford in Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting a big name star to be in a minor role, and that's fine. But like John C. Reilly, it was like, oh, look, he got another job with Disney. Like, he was Wreck-It Ralph, and now he's in Guardians, and now he's going to go do Wreck-It Ralph 2. And, you know, that. But his acting in the film, I liked. I thought they used him enough, and he wasn't over the top. It wasn't Step Brothers John C. Reilly. It was
right.
It was like Perfect Storm John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
Or that baseball movie with Kevin Costner. You know, it was more of a serious thing for him, and he let everybody else do the comedy, and I appreciated that. And I don't know if that's Peter Gunn or James Gunn or Marvel that's like, hey, tone that down a bit, but I thought all that stuff, I thought the whole Nova Corps thing worked really well. And could see them spinning that off to include Nova and do just a Nova Corps movie.
True.
Because I think that would work.
True. It was confirmed Nathan Fillion was not Nova.
I know. He was the alien in the in the prison that right. Groot picks up by his nostrils.
Yes.
That was Nathan Fillion. Somebody had said that he might have been the voice of the dog, of Cosmo the dog.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were like, well, that's what he's going to do. And fortunately, he wasn't that either. Which okay. leaves it open. I mean, they could bring him back as Nova. I think he'd make a good Nova.
Could. Yeah. But yeah, they were actually telling the truth. That yes. He was not Nova.
Yes. Nova didn't actually show up. This movie suffered from one of the things that I absolutely hate about Hollywood now, which is the trailer is filled with things that aren't in the actual movie.
Yes.
There's a bunch of dialogue, and I understand, like, what was it? When John C. Reilly is giving the rap sheets, Drax is not on Xandar, so... You know, that was all done for the trailer or whatever. Mm. But there are shots and pieces of dialogue that are in later trailers that appear nowhere in the film.
Yep.
And Chris Nolan started that shit with Batman. And right. that has always bugged me. It's like, don't put it... I understand the movies change. But if you think it's going to change, don't put it in a trailer.
Right. Like, that makes sense.
Like, I'm waiting for scenes where I'm like, oh, that looked really cool in the trailer. Oh, well, we cut that out.
Ugh. Yeah.
So.
Sad.
Yeah. I was going to say something else. What was it? See, we talked about the soundtrack. We talked about the story. The one thing that I was a little disheartened about was... them seemingly getting rid of Ronan. Ronan the Accuser in the comic books actually becomes part of the Guardians later on. And I was kind of hoping for kind of like a Loki thing where have to come back and they need him for something. So, hey, let's go get him and drag him along. Because I think I liked his performance. I liked the dude that played him.
Yeah.
But it was that Marvel thing. Well, it was that comic book thing of, well, let's kill the bad guy. No, don't do that.
Right.
Like they did that. They didn't kill Loki, and it worked out really well for them.
True.
And, you know, I don't know. I kind of feel like that's always a cop out. Maybe he'll show back up. Maybe it's a thing like Loki where the Infinity Gem actually transported him somewhere else. I don't know.
It could be. It could be, you know, kind of a Gandalf thing that he transforms into something or, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the other hand, movies don't come out as frequently as comic books. So... You know, there probably won't be more than, you know, maybe three or four Guardians of the Galaxy movies. So, you know, moving on to different villains, certainly a good thing. But, you know, like you say, in this case, it was a great opportunity for a villain that turns around and becomes a good guy.
Yeah, and that happens a lot in comic books, and I think that mm-hmm. Even if it was like begrudgingly, like he's got to help them, you know,
sure.
he's pissed off Thanos, and now Thanos is on his way to Earth to get the Infinity Gems, the whatever is going to happen, you know, to get the last one to create the gauntlet, the other guy, Von Strucker, has at the end of Captain America. Like, you know, Ronan has worked for him. Ronan knows his weaknesses or whatever. Okay, we got to go get him and convince him that this is a bad thing. Like, he's pissed off Thanos and he's got to help us. Like, yeah. it just seems like it would make a cohesive story. And admittedly, I don't know what their plans are. And they're really good at what they're doing right now. So
true.
I'm sure they have a plan, but I don't like the, well, we'll just kill all the villains at the end. Cause yeah. That's not really comic bookish.
No,
but
no, that's true. But so what do you think, you know, obviously the main competition here is DC,
right?
And Batman versus Superman.
Right.
What do you see? Do you see any effect this has on the direction that DC goes?
No, because I think DC has already made up their mind to squeeze in as much into Batman versus Superman as they can. They've always said, they've made it a point of saying that we're not going to follow Marvel's lead. Like, what they do has no bearing on us.
Okay.
Even though they're trying to squeeze everything in to get to a Justice League movie as quickly as they can. Mm-hmm. I think it was very telling that they moved the release date up to not compete with Marvel. And
yeah.
Even kind of admitted, like, well, this gives us a couple of weeks before Captain America 3 comes out to really corner that market. And they're scared. Like, when they first announced it, they're like, we don't care. We've got the better characters. We're not moving. And Marvel said, that's fine. We're not moving either. And Marvel said, it'll be chicken. It'll be who flinches first.
Yeah.
And I think with the positiveness that Captain America 2 had, all the hype for the Avengers 2, and now Guardians of the Galaxy, they're like, well, we better make a move here. Mm-hmm. It feels to me very much like DC is putting all their eggs in one basket. And honestly, if Batman versus Superman doesn't do well, you may not see a Justice League movie, where Marvel
yeah.
would just dust themselves off and be like, we're on this road. Like, we're going to
yeah.
follow this through to the end, where DC is very much a, well, if this doesn't work, then we'll go try something else.
Well, DC's only, you know, this is DC's second movie. You know, I mean, you know, they're going with the, you know, basically starting with the Avengers instead of the individual movies.
Right.
Which I guess makes it a little bit more of an all or nothing play.
Well, it does. And DC's gun shy because of things like Green Lantern and things of, you know, things that they've tried that have just failed miserably. And
sure.
In a world of comic book movies, when you have a comic book movie that just, they can't get off the ground, and you know, Marvel themselves haven't really had a misstep, but the brand has. Like, they've given their characters to other people that have just failed miserably.
Yeah.
Daredevil, Ghost Rider, like, you look mm-hmm. at those movies and you're like, that's nothing like what comic book movies should be like these days.
Right.
And you look at the success that Marvel had starting with Iron Man, when they figured Iron Man would be the flop and the Incredible Hulk would be that starting point, where they suddenly were like, well, okay, now we have to throw all our effort into Iron Man and build it this way.
Yeah.
And I mean, Iron Man 2 was not a good film. Iron Man 2 suffers a lot from rushing into production to get their timeline running.
True.
And I think DC is going to run into that. They're going to be like, we're going to pack this movie full of everything. Like, this is just shy of a Justice League movie. Like, if for any reason Batman and Superman work together, then it's got to be a Justice League movie. But as long as we keep them at odds, we don't actually have to call it that, but we can introduce everybody. And I think it's too much too soon. It's gonna be overkill. Because not only have you not been introduced to Wonder Woman, this version of Batman, Cyborg, Aquaman.
Yeah.
at least when the Avengers came together, you knew where they had been. Like, if they had never done a Thor movie, him just showing up on the top of the jet, you would have been like, well, who's this guy? Why do I care that he wants Loki back? Like,
true.
Like, that, I wouldn't have cared why Thor was there. And I kind of feel the same way about Wonder Woman. I'm not really going to care why Wonder Woman's there. Like, what's her journey been? How did she get to this point? Like, for as much as I hate origin films, there has to be a little bit of growth. I mean, I have to know something about them. Even if they were in their own movie, and it's not so much like they come out fully formed as Wonder Woman, it starts and she's chasing somebody down. At least there's a story that I can get behind.
Yeah.
And
have I told you? Have I told you my prediction for Batman versus Superman?
No, but you were right with your last prediction, so I'd like to hear this.
Okay. My what I'm envisioning. Metropolis is trashed. Lex Luthor steps up to put things right. Bruce Wayne also steps in to contribute financially and moral support. At least that's what Bruce Wayne says he's doing. He's actually there to act as Batman to check up on this alien to find out if he's good or bad. You get the Dark Knight Rises type fight between Superman, Batman. They battle. Now, I don't know if you remember, but a while ago there was a hint that Wonder Woman was actually going to be Kryptonian.
No.
I don't believe the rumor came out. I don't believe that, but what I do think might be a possibility is that the gods that Wonder Woman associates with, they might have been Kryptonian. So she is a demigod, might be half Kryptonian. So she comes in then as a, half human, half god, kind of brings the two, Superman and Batman together, kind of becomes the unifying element, and kind of does the hey, we can work together type thing, and that's what inspires all the other heroes to come out of the woodwork, and that opens the door for all of the other heroes to suddenly appear.
Interesting.
So that's my theory. So
that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And in that scenario, that would explain why they're going for they're starting with the group and then branching into everybody else.
Right. Yeah.
You don't need a lot of background. You don't need a full movie to explain who Wonder Woman is. You can do that later, but just a general, I'm here to unite you two.
That would make a lot of sense, and I like that theory a lot. I think instead of trying to shoehorn everybody in, I think that would be their best bet, is to do something like that. I didn't read that she was supposed to be Kryptonian.
It was, it was one of those rumors. That was a while ago. It kind of came and disappeared. And, nobody kind of gave it much credence. But I think in the newer comics, they've actually hinted that the gods were actually aliens.
Okay.
And so, in that case, it wouldn't be much of a step to make them, an even older Kryptonian colony ship.
Right, because like Earth was considered an outpost, right?
Yeah.
In Man of Steel?
Yes.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you had the craziness with what's her name? The one who's Supergirl. What's her real name?
Kara. Yeah, Supergirl, basically.
Yeah, so there was all of that stuff that like she was in the empty pod. Mm-hmm. In Superman and Man of Steel, and if for some reason she even if she was like the defining factor, like she went to live on this island and like this race sprouted from her, like technically, well, Wonder Woman can fly, right? In the comic books?
No.
And I thought she couldn't in the later one. Oh, okay.
I think, yeah. She kind of flies, but not...
So if she's like half Kryptonian and can half do stuff,
mm-hmm.
like that would explain a lot.
Yeah.
I like
now
that.
Now you have your trilogy of, you know, human, superhuman, semi superhuman,
yeah.
and everybody else. So
I like that. We should call Zack Snyder and make sure that he he gets on that.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there are ways that you know, Batman versus Superman can be really, really good, really unique, something special. So hopefully they stick to it.
Yeah. I mean, did you happen to catch the bootleg trailer from Comic-Con online?
No, I didn't. I think I saw, I saw a, like an artist reproduction of it. Like, you know, like a storyboard of it, well, done that way.
I mean, yeah, it's straight out of Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
I mean, it's, yeah. It, everything about it is straight up Dark Knight Returns. And now they're saying like Ben Affleck's in his, like his Batman is in his 40s and he might be semi-retired. And, yeah. You know, I watched it. It was cell phone quality. So like what I saw is what you could see, but it irks me because Marvel was always good at releasing their Comic-Con stuff a month or two after Comic-Con's over and say, hey, it's a little bit more polished now, but this is what we showed at Comic-Con. And
yeah,
DC's
right.
Like, we're not showing this to anybody else. This is going to stay hidden and locked up and you're never going to see this again. And it's like, that's how you draw attention to it. That's how you get people excited for it.
Yes and no. You know, the downside of that is that you're really reducing the impact of Comic-Con. You don't have, you know, you just, if you don't make it to Comic-Con, you wait a week and it'll be online. Which, you know, is one of the good and bad things about the internet is, you know, used to be the only way to see this stuff was to go to a convention.
Right.
And, you know, by not making that con exclusive, you've kind of weakened that a little bit. But like I say, that has pros and cons.
Right. I mean, I don't know. As much as I don't want to be spoiled by stuff, like going back to Guardians, like they released extended previews and scenes and stuff online before the movie came out. And I made the conscious choice not to watch any of it. Like I watched the first couple of trailers and got really excited. And then I was like, okay, I won't go into any of the spoiler stuff. I'm not going to read anything that says spoiler on it. I'm not going to read blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you go in and you're like, oh, that was a really good movie. I'm glad some of that stuff wasn't spoiled for me. But you have to build the excitement. And I know DC's going to say, well, it's Superman and Batman. You should be excited anyway. And it's like, until I see it moving on screen, I don't buy Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. Not until I hear him talk.
But do you think there's a point in... Is there any point in getting you excited now? Or should they be getting you excited when it's time to buy a ticket?
I think you drive that for as long as you can, like they did with Dark Knight, where there was a year and change out before the movie came out, and they were doing like the scavenger hunts and things with the Joker, and they were building up that excitement that lasted right up until the movie came out.
True.
And that was Warner Brothers, and that was technically DC, so they should like look at that and be like, hey,
yeah,
we should do that again. I will say I'm impressed that there has really been no like spy photos of Batman and Superman in a street somewhere.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, they've done a really good job of keeping the lid on that.
Or does that mean there isn't going to be much of them in the
well,
movie?
Well, that could be as well. He's only in
the
suit for...
It's boardroom drama.
Yeah. They're actually in a court.
Yes, it's just Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent, with Lex Luthor in an office somewhere.
You see, now that would be funny if that was... If all the stuff that you've seen of Ben Affleck running through the streets is like the very beginning of the movie,
right?
And then it breaks into a courtroom drama, and that's it. And Diana Prince is like there is like a journalist or something from a competing newspaper,
right?
And you're like, what the hell is this? And they're like, it's Batman v Superman. Like we said it right in the title. This isn't. They're not fighting. The V is a term for when you sue somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It's a court case. Batman versus Superman.
You're right. Yep.
And the character witness is Lex Luthor. Okay. Like, look at the mess that this dude made in my buildings. Like.
Uh huh. Like no superhero movie you've ever seen before.
That's right. Like Bruce Wayne is called because. You know, they wipe out a satellite in the first film.
Yep.
And he's like, yep. Look, you know how much money that cost me to put back in space? He's like, this dude needs to be stopped. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds like a short film we should make.
It is, isn't it?
To come out right before.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I need to start writing.
Yes. We can do that.
That's awesome. Well, so before we go, let's switch over to Star Wars real quick. Have you been following any of the rumors or the spy shots that have come out in the last week?
I haven't looked at. I've seen a few of the spy shots. Been hearing some of the rumors. Combining, you know, matching the Batman, Superman, and Star Wars. I hear Ben Affleck had to get in on the getting hurt on the set.
Yes.
Bandwagon.
Yep.
But that's
good press.
They're back to filming now for Star Wars, aren't they?
Yes.
Harrison Ford back.
I believe he's back. For
okay.
At least a little while. There was a interview with one of the cast members that said that he's not back until November. Not Harrison Ford, but the dude that they were talking to, Adam Driver, I think is his name.
Okay.
He says his role isn't back until like November to like early December. But Ford was supposed to go back to continue filming. But they released, at least supposedly, they released some pictures of the hallway and the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. They released what looks like a Star Destroyer hallway photo. And apparently the rumor is that Han Solo no longer owns the Millennium Falcon and that him and Chewie are piloting a Star Destroyer, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but
I can see it. I mean, you know, they're working for the man now. They're part of the system. You know, they, you know, when the rebels took over the government, they're gonna inherit all of that infrastructure.
But I don't see. I'm not so convinced that the rebels have won yet. I'm kind of, some of the rumors that I've heard is that just because they overthrew the Emperor doesn't mean that the rebels actually won.
Mission accomplished. Didn't you see George Bush?
Oh, there you go.
yeah.
But things like the new series that's coming out, Star Wars Rebels, on Disney, actually ties into the next three movies rather tightly as these bad guys that are called the Inquisitors, that are a sect of the Sith that was controlled by Darth Vader, apparently.
Okay.
And that all that stuff in the Rebels is going to tie into the movie, and that they're still hunting the Rebels down, which is why they're still stormtroopers and there are still...
I thought that was taking place between trilogies.
It is, but it ties... Apparently, okay. It ties in, which means they didn't win at the end of Return of the Jedi. Like, there are still people that are hunting the remaining Jedi down, and...
It basically, what it means, or could mean, is that they just switched roles. You know, if the Rebels took over the... they could have taken over Coruscant and the government, but there can still be a Empire loyal faction that is, you know, now they're struggling to move in and regain control.
Okay.
You know, that would, you know, that would make a lot of sense. That you know, I mean, that's kind of what they did in the books. You know, yeah, I'm thinking of the Zahn novels.
Mm-hmm.
That I can't remember the names of right now, but that was kind of the approach that they were going with, and you know, that makes a lot of sense in terms of the movies, because I don't think they're gonna wanna take away from the victory of Return of the Jedi. You know, they wanna have that sense of, you know, that was... There was a happy ending, but life continues, and so I would think that would be a more likely source of antagonism was from the Empire rebuilding itself from outside and it's been 30 years too. You know, how long has this rebellion going on if they haven't succeeded by now?
Right.
They're not very good heroes, are they?
Well,
you know,
maybe that's what they're going for.
Maybe
they're going, but, like, look how terrible these people are. What the hell?
Yeah.
They can't ever throw one little government? What the hell?
Right. Kill the governor. They kill the emperor and they still can't clean this up? Come on. But yeah, now I've been hearing that Vader might be back.
Yeah, in the form of a WWE wrestler.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Mm. But yeah, that sounds odd.
Yeah, I'm gonna reserve judgment until I actually see it.
Well, however, bear in mind the whole reason Anakin went into went to the dark side was to control death.
Right. Well.
So.
And that's like one of the things I talked to John about, I think last week, is I finally finished the Clone Wars cartoon on Netflix.
Yeah.
And one of the things that struck me is how much that series contradicts the movies. And
yeah,
the last three episodes is all about Yoda trying to learn how to retain his form after death, and that he's got to study and he's got to learn from Qui-Gon and these five other witch things, to where when Anakin dies in Return of the Jedi, he just kind of shows up as a Force ghost. And, you know, you're
true.
Like, well, that doesn't make any sense in the context of everything else. Like, I don't mm-hmm. think Yoda and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan later on were like, you know what, we got to go help Anakin. Like, we got to go convince Darth Vader that when he's good again, that he can, like, transcend death and still keep his form.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of that stuff just seems a lot of contradictory to me, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, I think.
Yeah, I'm really excited. This is the first time since Return of the Jedi where anything can happen. Anybody at any time can die. You know, it's not like you're holding on to any memories now. They're mm-hmm. not tied to any other canon of, well, here's a story that Obi-Wan told in the first movie, so we have to shoehorn this in there somehow.
Right.
Now it's, they literally could open up on the film and Han Solo be flying a ship and the ship gets blown up and you're like, whoa, what the hell? Like, yes. They can do anything they want, and that excites me.
Yeah. And yeah, that is true.
And to tie it all around, I think that's what I liked about Guardians of the Galaxy was there is no preconceived notions from this film. There was anything could happen. You were, yeah. You, there was no, everybody knows what Groot can do, so nobody's really upset when he sacrifices himself. Well, I didn't know he could grow himself back, so, you know, it's pulling at your heartstrings.
Sure.
And there was nothing saying, well, Groot's going to be in the next film, so. Although he is, but.
Well, it's not technically Groot, right? It's son of Groot.
Is it? I thought it was.
Well,
see, we don't know.
Special. But, you know, that was, I mean, my impression was, you know, it was like, gave him a seed, and so it was.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So if people want to see your work, buy your stuff, where can they find your software?
Best place to see it all is entireprizeenterprises.com.
And don't forget to buy stuff off of Amazon for Mark.
Amazon, yes.
Go buy some books. Make them happy.
Yeah. It's fun stuff.
Yes. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can always send us an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Go to our Facebook page. Rate us on iTunes. Do all that fun crap. And let us know you're listening. So until next week, this is Chris.
This is Mark.
Have a good week. I am Groot.
Ha ha ha.